Tonight, we're providing the opposition Democrats the chance to offer their own assessment of the state of these United States. What the Democrats say in rebuttal to the president will carry much added weight because, of course, they now control Congress. Here is Senate Majority Leader Robert Byrd and Speaker of the House Jim Wright.
Good evening. Just a few minutes ago, I was in the House chamber standing behind the president. That's part of the speaker's duty in this system where we put patriotism above partisanship. But the position of speaker also has another constitutional duty. In fact, it dates all the way back to England in the 1370s. The idea of a speaker was to have someone speak to the king in behalf of the House of Commons about the needs of the people. Several of the early English speakers of the House in performing this duty were beheaded. When I think of that, I thank God for the Constitution and for those who wrote it. They created a system of checks and balances in which the President and the Congress can work together as equal partners in carrying out your will. The American people last November chose Democratic majorities to serve them in both houses of Congress. Now, this doesn't mean we have to pursue 2 years of unrelieved conflict. There are many things on which we can all agree. There are some on which we honestly disagree. And there are some, no doubt, on which we can find avenues of reasonable compromise. Lest there be any question of our good faith, let me stress right up front that we'll be ready right now or at any time to sit down with the president and his top advisors to seek ways to stop piling up deficits by adopting a pay-as-we-go plan. No gimmicks, no selling off assets, no tampering with the Social Security Trust Fund. Just get every annual appropriation and every source of revenue right out on the table and see if we can make a match. Mr. President, you and I both have grandchildren. We need to stop sending them our bills. With new leadership in both the House and the Senate, I've asked Senate Majority Leader Robert Byrd to join me here in describing our vision for America. Senator Byrd will point out a way to build strength and credibility for America's foreign policy and respect for America's word. But, you know, if America's going to be strong in the world, I think we have to be true to our ideals here at home. Words are not enough. What counts is action. Since this Congress convened 3 weeks ago today, we've already taken action on three major legislative programs that perform urgent duties for this land of ours. First is a clean water bill, renewing our commitment to clean up this nation's streams for this and future generations. Now, that bill's been passed and sent to the president. We hope he signs it. The second is a highway bill to complete the interstate highway system with straight, safe highways for American people. 1,500 needed highway projects in all of our states await the speedy completion of this bill to put some 165,000 Americans to work on this constructive undertaking. That bill's already passed the House, and it'll pass the Senate this week. The third bill, which passed the House just today, is emergency help for the homeless. You know, we have twice the number of homeless families as just last year. People who huddle against the icy blasts of winter on street grates and in boxcars and culverts throughout America tonight. A warm place to sleep, a hot meal, a minimal medical attention. Surely that's not too much to ask for America's own. These bills are not budget busters. All of them were within the budget resolution. And let me hasten to add that they had strong bipartisan support. Republicans have rallied with Democrats in a cooperative effort to get these bills passed in record time. The president said, let's get on with the job. Congress has been getting on with the job for the last 3 weeks. Throughout our history, America has grown stronger when we faced our problems openly and overcome them together. Three of our most urgent problems today are the trade deficit, the farm crisis, and the education crisis. In the past few years, we've been hit by a staggering trade deficit. Last year, that represented a drain on our economy of more than $2,600 per family. It has robbed us of more than 3 million jobs in the last 4 years. Every few days, another factory closes or announces a big layoff somewhere in America. Just 4 years ago, we were the world's largest creditor nation. Today, we're the world's largest debtor nation. Hey, we can do better than that. We welcome the administration's new words of concern about the trade deficit. For 3 years, we have implored the president to take action. Last year, the House passed a comprehensive trade bill, a huge bipartisan vote. Well, that bill died without any action in the Republican Senate, and the problem grew steadily worse. Well, this year, large majorities in both houses are determined to act, and we will act. We believe in free trade, and we just think it has to be fair trade. America has a right to insist that other countries treat American-made products the same way we treat their products. That isn't protectionism, that's reciprocity. But more than that, we must have a conscious government policy to promote American products. You know what our number one export is from the Port of New York? I'm almost ashamed to say it. It's not machinery. It's not computers. It's junk. Yeah? Scrap metal. Mostly from junked automobiles. If that isn't bad enough, you know what the second biggest export is? It's paper. Waste paper. Trash. That's shipped to the Far East and made into cardboard boxes for the foreign-made televisions and clothing and toys and shoes that they send back to sell to us. From our number one port in the most industrialized country in the world, our two leading exports are junk metal and scrap paper. We need strong incentives to invest in those things that modernize and improve our aging American industrial plants. Make them more competitive and improve productivity. Then made in the USA, once again, can be the badge of quality and value throughout the world. That's our number one congressional objective this year. Our second major problem is the plight of America's farm families. America's farm economy is in a desperate condition. There were more farm foreclosures in the last 2 years than at any time since the Great Depression. Thousands of family farms right now hang by a thread. Now, the trouble is that the administration has seemed not to care. Or perhaps just not to understand. In 1985, the government put up $4.5 billion of public money to bail out one big bank in Chicago. But the president vetoed a much smaller bill of loan guarantees that would have allowed local banks to give many thousands of America's farm families a breathing spell to save themselves from foreclosure. Because of that veto, thousands of families lost their farms. We don't have to spend more to do better. Too much of our $25 billion support program goes to a few huge corporate enterprises, not family farms at all. Our system of individual family farms has made us the best fed nation on earth. And we think that's worth preserving. And that's another of our Democratic congressional objectives this year. Third is to revitalize American education for all of America's children. Until once again we lead the world in literacy, in learning, research, job skills. We'll talk more about that in a few minutes. First, let's hear from Majority Leader Robert Byrd about America's place in the world and how we improve it and preserve it.
Thank you, Tim. Jim Wright and I are the new leaders in Congress. He in the House, I in the Senate. We're from rural America. We're veterans of the most dramatic debates of our time. We've seen this country in triumph, and we've seen it in depression. And we know what a resilient and trusting people we are. The administration's recent dealings with Iran have cast a long shadow over this country. There's a gathering sense of mistrust. The sale of arms to Iran in direct contradiction to our stated foreign policy raises real questions about trust. But it also raises real doubts about competence. Without competence and a good measure of common sense, government will have a tough time earning the nation's trust. And government without trust is government without power. That's why so many find the Iranian affair so troubling. It was a breach of faith, both here and abroad. Like people, a nation is only as good as its word. If our word is good, our nation is strong. If our word is in doubt, our nation is weak. We do not hold the free world together at gunpoint. It is a mutual trust that has bound us, a respect for one another, and a common commitment to human dignity and to peace. This Democratic Congress wants to work with the President and the administration in advancing our national interests abroad. We need a coherent foreign policy that aggressively seeks to get the peace movement back on track in the Middle East. A policy that does not just offer the Contras as a solution to our problems in Central America. A foreign policy that utilizes all of the resources available to us, diplomatic, political, economic, and military, to achieve America's goals in the world. For the moment, our allies and our friends are bewildered, and they question our motives. They wonder how we can rail against terrorism and then sell arms to terrorists. And many of you are wondering too. Foreign policy is too crucial in today's world to be decided in the dark. Tonight, Americans are once again held hostage by terrorists. We must stand together and have the courage of our convictions. Americans love liberty and human freedom. All of us want to see our hostages brought home. But if risks must be taken, then all America must understand those risks, and all Americans must take them together. Bold actions can succeed, but they must be based on carefully considered and sound judgment. The President owes us all a more open debate on foreign policy in return for our trust. And we owe our allies and friends a firmer handshake in return for theirs. The administration has the obligation to tell we, the American people, exactly what led to the arms for hostage deal and what happened to accountability in the White House. And meanwhile, the world moves on. And so do the nation's concerns. The Democratic agenda, as Jim Wright has just outlined, and will outline some more, is as short as it is monumental. Set the deficit on a downward trend. Regain our prominence in world markets as creators, producers, and exporters. And make this country the most secure in the world. We live in a hostile world. Behind the outer perimeter of diplomacy, America must have ready and awesome force to meet force. Democrats are committed to a strong defense. Real national defense isn't just measured by missiles or destroyers. We know we have to spend billions, but we must manage our defense dollars better to really get our money's worth. And still meet the world on the terms that are offered, whether it's terrorism, a conventional war, or a nuclear threat. While we must maintain a strong defense, we must also work to reduce the risk of nuclear war. Democrats have backed the president's efforts to negotiate a tough, verifiable, and lasting arms control agreement. It is a pursuit, like balancing our foreign policy, that must override partisan differences. Congress wants a tough arms treaty to be our monument to the last half of this century. And I would caution any adversary that questions that resolve. We want to work with the administration to see the sound, solid proposals are put on the negotiating table, proposals that do not leave the United States and the rest of the free world at a disadvantage. Right now, Congress wants to get on. His is the final signature on our work. His is the final word echoed around the world. Without the president as an equal and active partner, Congress is stymied. It was all laid out in the Constitution just 200 years ago. The creation of Congress as the people's branch, the concept of checks and balances between Congress and the president, the burden of bipartisan consensus. It has taught us over the years that government is at its best when Congress and the president hitch themselves to the same wagon and pull together in the same direction. No force abroad is as great as America united. The last 2 years of the Reagan presidency need not be a period of discord. A weakened president serves no one. A strong president serves us all. We can rebound from the Iranian debacle. We can rebuild our foreign policy. We can rethink our military budget. But we must begin by winning back the nation's trust. And Jim Wright and I are committed to helping the president to regain that trust. With God's help, we stand ready to do our part.
You know, throughout our history, America stood for something. Like a great locomotive that pulls a long train, a powerful ideal has pulled our country forward all these 200 years. We believe that each generation should do a little better than the one before. Be better educated, better employed, better housed. Have more opportunity, a better chance for our children. That's the American dream, isn't it? Now we see a disturbing new reality. Not upward mobility, but downward mobility. The average 30-year-old American today is making 26% less than his older brother did just 10 years ago. The average 45-year-old couple is finding it harder, not easier, to send their children to college. Last year, the Japanese, with just half our population, graduated half again more scientists and engineers than we did. Soviet Union graduated more technicians than we did. That's just not good enough. That could be suicidal. We're not satisfied with educational mediocrity. It isn't good enough when other countries outrank us in literacy. And high school graduates cannot read. Education is the fuel that runs the locomotive. 100th Congress is determined to restore education to its rightful place at the very pinnacle of our national priorities. President Reagan spoke of education tonight in glowing terms. You know, the sad truth is that his budget, delivered to Congress earlier this month, would actually cut our commitment to education by about 28%. With more technical skills required by young people entering the job market, White House wants to abolish vocational education. The president's budget cuts in student assistance would make college virtually impossible next year for about 3 million young Americans who want to go to college. You know what that is? That's unilateral disarmament. We simply cannot underfund education and do anything positive about the trade deficit or even about defense. For 6 years, this administration has doubled Pentagon spending and actually shrunk educational opportunities.
However splendid our weapons, we won't be first in defense or first in trade if we settle for second best in education. The very best financial investment this country ever made was the GI Bill of Rights at the end of World War II. It sent an entire generation of Americans to college, and our country's been reaping the dividends ever since. That program, simply in greater taxes paid by higher earnings, has actually repaid the Treasury about $20 for every dollar invested. Now, the President sometimes likes to criticize Congress for what he calls big spending. But you know, the plain truth is that for the 6 years of this administration, Congress actually has appropriated less in total spending than Mr. Reagan has asked us to appropriate. The basic disagreement is not over how much we spend. It's where we spend it, what we get for it, and who pays the bill, ourselves or our children. The President's newest budget would cut $5.5 billion from the education of our young and spend that same amount on research for just one new weapon. It asks more for the Pentagon, more for foreign aid, more for space, more for Star Wars, more for the war in Latin America. But it cut education, cut the clean water program, cut Medicare and Medicaid, cut what we do for the disadvantaged. And are you ready for this? The President's budget would make deep cuts in our commitment to drug enforcement. Last year, Congress, Democrats and Republicans together, passed a very important anti-drug initiative. President Reagan signed that bill with great fanfare. He called the war on drugs our first line of defense. Remember? Well, now, just 3 months later, he wants us to renege on that pledge. He wants to cut in half the commitment we made for anti-drug training in the schools that he just got through talking about. He wants to practically eliminate the amount we promised for local law enforcement agencies to combat drugs in the streets of our cities. You see, that's the kind of gap between rhetoric and reality that we just can't tolerate and maintain trust in government. Mr. President, we think promises are more important than that. And this is one that Congress, Democrats and Republicans alike, are determined to keep. Are there fundamental differences between the White House and the Democratic Congress? Yes, there are some. But you know, there also are things on which we can work together. We'll work with the White House to create a fair and equitable system of welfare reform about which the President spoke. Help get people off the welfare rolls and onto productive payrolls. We're for that. We'll enthusiastically embrace an insurance plan to indemnify Americans against the sudden financial ravage of a catastrophic illness. You bet. We'll actively promote productivity and increased competitiveness. And we'll support with our votes and with our hearts and with our prayers any reasonable effort to reduce the terrible tensions that afflict this world. That's what America stands for. America can't stand still, you know. We've moved forward only when we've been raising our sights, not when we've been lowering them. Our children and our children's children will hold us accountable not for what we've said we'd do, but for what we've done. We wish the President good health. We offer him our friendship. We're anxious to work with him as full and equal partners in this, the freest and greatest government on earth. Thank you for this. Good night.